This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Today on Know-How,
protecting your campus network, powering your gear, and augmenting your reality. It's a TWiT show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade, and evidently have an epic Kamehameha or Hadouken. You think it's a Hadouken?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not very cultured, so yes, I rely on that being a Hadouken and not whatever you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's cool. It's cool if it's a Hadouken. I'm just saying that the Kamehameha has way more power behind it because it uses the entire chi of the character, but that's cool. You know, it's all right.
What is the key combination when you're playing that video game?
Up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, B, A, start.
Okay, great. Okay, I can get behind that.
Folks, we are the show that shows you some of the projects that we've been playing with. Maybe takes a few of the questions that you have as our Kitas, our know-it-all, and we spread it out over as much time as we need to force all that knowledge into your head like a protein.
Sorry, I had a lot of coffee.
It's a morning episode, folks. Oh, Jason, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah.
It's lovely to have you here. I haven't had you on Know-How since the MAME arcade cabinet.
Yeah, I think we came on and talked about the Raspberry Pi and integrating all the arcade goodness, which is basically what I use my Raspberry Pi for. But I get a lot out of it based on the time that I've worked with you and Brian and bringing it on the show and everything.
Now, did you actually upgrade that Pi to the Pi 3?
Yeah, it has the Pi 3 in it now.
It's got more kick, doesn't it?
And I took the Pi 2, and that's become like the take with me when I go on trips console thing. But again, I've kind of gone back and forth as far as what should be powering the arcade and what should be powering the console, because sometimes I find some of the arcade games that I'm playing really don't need the Pi 3, and some of the console games that I'm playing do. It seems like it should probably be swapped.
Yeah, because when you have the stand-up experience, it lends itself to a certain type of game, which is typically the side-scrolling arcade-style shoot-em-up, not the really intensive, immersive game that you might need more power for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really with the stand-up arcade, I'm going to, me personally, my kid's probably a different story, but me personally, I'm going to want to go play those old-school arcade games that are meant for that kind of stand-up experience. Am I going to go and play, like, Super Mario on an arcade stand-up thing and last for hours and hours to play through it? Probably not. I'd much prefer to just, like, sit back and be on my couch and use a controller that way.
I might have been able to do that when I was actually a child in an arcade.
Yes.
Now that I'm old and fat, after 20 minutes, I'd be just like, they should put chairs on this thing.
Gosh, man, my back hurts. Man, what's up with my lower back?
I do not like this age thing. We gotta fix
that. Happens to all of us.
Well, we're not here to talk about MAME cabinets. We're not here to talk about Raspi. We're not here to talk about aging and back problems. We're here to give people a little bit more back to school information. Now, the last three episodes, we've shown off some of the gear, laptops, desktops, some of the little accessories, things like batteries that they might need as they go back to their campus. But we did have a question last week when I was with Megan from a person who wanted to know specifically how he could protect himself on a college campus. Now, we're going to go ahead and read the email, the entry from our Google Plus group once again. This comes from our Kita by the name of David Bruins. And Jason, what does he say?
He says, what is the best way to protect yourself at college on a college network? I'm going to have a NAS, network attached storage set up there too. And what is the best way to protect as much as possible? Unfortunately, my college does not allow routers, so that is out.
Right. So we spoke about this briefly last week. Essentially, what I told him was, in order to protect yourself, the obvious part is visible. You have to get the thing out of eyesight, because if they come into your dorm room and they see you have a router connected, the jig is up.
That's like a standard in dorm rooms now, that you can't have a router in your...
Really, this was unique in the fact that he said they actually go into rooms to check. I've never heard of that before. In fact, at our universities, we would never do that because that would be a gross violation of privacy. But that's what happens at his place. I have to assume that that's their policy.
Interesting.
However, the main way that they're going to detect is electronically. What kind of information can they get from the device when it's connected to the network? And we told him that there were a couple of strategies, a few things that he could try to make it more difficult for them to figure out that he actually has a router. And of course, the reason why he wants the router is because he wants to protect himself. You have to assume that something like a college network is entirely hostile, because I guarantee you there's at least one student who's learning a little bit about network security, or maybe he already knows, who is hammering away at the different devices that are connected, just looking what's out there. Well, you don't want to risk that. So you want to have something between your devices and the other devices on the network. And the best way to do that is with a consumer router, something that can do NAT and firewall. And in our case, I've chosen this. This is the Synology RT2600. This is their newest release. This is actually my backup unit. I have an RT2600 that's currently powering my network at home. This is way overkill for what we're going to do, but it is my favorite, so I brought it out. Do you want to see really quickly a few of the things that you could do?
I want to see that.
Okay. And by the way, the tools we're going to be showing you, totally free. You can download this. Okay. And I expect you to do this.
I will. Definitely download all of these free tools.
Okay. So what we need to do first is we need to make sure that we've turned off anything that might identify the router very easily. And unfortunately for you, I'm sorry. I know this is a pain. You're going to have to turn off your wireless. Wireless is literally a beacon. If your IT guy goes around your dorm room with just a mobile device and a Wi-Fi scanner, they can very quickly figure out which rooms have Wi-Fi access points. And since they're not their Wi-Fi access points, they can assume that you also have it attached to a router. So no wireless. Bummer, but it's absolutely necessary. So if you go to HDMI 1 or 2, there we go, this one. On the Synology, it's super, super simple. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the network center. I'm going to go into wireless, and there's a little button here for turning on and off Wi-Fi, and I just have to turn it off. Unfortunately, I just do this. I know it's a bummer, especially since it's so convenient to have wireless. But Jason, the problem is, even if I hide this, even if I make it so that it's not advertising itself, anyone outside with even the smallest bit of networking knowledge knows how to look for them. And if they see it, it's basically a searchlight saying, look in this room.
I mean, even if you just have an app, like I know you've shown off on the network many times, just a simple app that you can have on your phone that's constantly scanning for these things.
Precisely.
And they can pick up the power of that bit based on where they're at. And if it's coming through screaming while you're in the room, then you know it's there. Right?
And unfortunately, some people see that there's that the setting for hidden. Hidden SSID, which basically means that it doesn't display itself. So it doesn't come up in your list of available Wi-Fi access.
But it's still a frequency that's out there.
It's still a frequency, yeah. So if someone has a tool that's just looking for energy being emitted, they're going to see your device, and then they could just DF, direction find it. So you have a directional antenna, and on your device, you just turn it back and forth until it gets the strongest as possible, and you head off in that direction.
Dang.
Yeah. Again, sorry, but wires are your friend. So that's the easy part. Congratulations. You've just made it possible for a super low-level entry to not be able to find the fact that you've got something in your room. However, the problem is you're still connected to the campus network, which means you need to do what you can to make sure that this doesn't look like a router to your campus network. So we're going to use a tool called Nmap.
Is it like a camouflage tool? Like what does it make it appear to be?
Well, the Nmap is just a security tool. So all it's going to do is it's going to allow me to scan a range or scan a particular IP address, and it will tell me what it can see on that IP address.
Oh, okay.
So the way that a network works.
So it's like a window into what others could see about
precisely.
You, because you want to know that, of course.
Yeah, I want to be able to see what they can see. Yeah. And Nmap is one of these tools that it's so basic, and it shows me so much that it gives me a window into that person's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you want to find out exactly how this works, you're going to want to go to our Networking 101 series where we did an entire episode on ports and Nmap. But let me give you the skivvy, Jason. When I think of a device on my network, I'm typically only thinking of the IP address, like 192.168.1.10, right? So that's my IP address. But within that IP address, I have multiple ports. Now, ports are what they sound like. They're ports where you can have services listening, ready to respond to a request.
Right, okay?
So, for example, FTP, or HTTP, which is www. Or HTTPS, they all have a particular port associated with that service. So it would actually be 192.168.1.10. And then colon 21, port 21 for FTP, or 80 for HTTP, or 443 for HTTPS. I don't have to type that in because the browser understands that when I type in HTTP or HTTPS to append that. But in the network side, I can see those ports open. If I have a web server, I definitely have port 80 open. If I have an FTP server, I definitely have port 21 open. If any of those are visible from the outside world by the IT manager, they know you're running something on your network. Right. So let me show you what it looks like. If you go to my other computer here, Alex, this is just running Nmap. This was a quick test I did. But there's some computer on this network here in the studio that has all of its ports open. This is really bad. I'm going to track that down after the show. I don't know what that
please
is.
Please don't track it to me.
Oh,
please
my
don't
gosh.
Track it
Look
to me.
Look at that. Seriously. It's like all the ports. All the ports. Let's get into that. So I've got...
101 IP addresses.
I know that my this is actually on the outside of my network. So this is on the WAN side of my router. I know my router is 10.135.25.202. So I'm going to put nmap 10.135.25.202. What's this? What this is doing now is it's looking at that IP address, and it's collecting all the data it possibly can. What ports are open? And what will it report back? Now, take a look at this. So this is a tool that an administrator at the college or university that I'm sitting at could easily run from his desktop. This has come back, and it's told me already that port 1723, although I've closed it, is available. That's the VPN port. So it means I most likely have a VPN application running on the Synology, which makes it visible. I'm going to have to shut that down. Something else, and we'll talk about this one a little bit later, is look at it finds the MAC address. So that's the media access control, the physical address of the adapter within the router that's connected to the network. This knows the physical address, 00113268 4368, and it knows, because of the prefix 001132, that it's a Synology device.
Oh, so that's unique to Synology?
That's unique to Synology. Okay. So manufacturers are giving out chunks of these addresses that they can use for their devices. So just from that information that it returned, that very simple information, an IT manager will say, okay, it's Synology, so it's either a NAS or a router. Both of those I don't want on my network. Mm-hmm. And it's running a VPN, which means, again it's a NAS or a router. Both of those are dead giveaways, and it would very quickly lead to a trip to your room from the IT guy who's looking for the device that shouldn't be there.
And they don't have to be in the vicinity to check this out. They just have to be connected to the network from their end, wherever they happen to be.
Precisely. And if they're good network administrators, they don't ever even have to leave the data center. Mm-hmm. They can just sit there and port scan their network all day and just look for these rogue devices that start popping up.
Okay.
But thankfully, Jason, there's a couple of things we can do to make their job a little harder.
Of course there is.
Yeah. So the first thing we're going to want to do is we need to turn off the VPN services. And not just turn them off, but we also have to make it so that they're not visible, completely invisible. So if
now,
you
does
go,
that mean that you cannot do VPN?
Correct.
At all. Okay.
Yeah, because the second you open up that port, if they're running a port scan, they're going to see
they're
a service
right
available.
Away. And they probably have the ability with their software to instantly recognize when something appears on the network out of nowhere and give that red flag and say,
Precisely.
Hey, something new popped up.
Precisely. So on my network, I actually wouldn't be running Nmap. It's my switch. My switch just tells me, oh, I've never seen traffic on this port before.
Right.
You want to take a look at this. It would actually flag it for me, and I could check it out later. Any IT administrator worth his salt is going to be doing the same thing. Because that's how we run torrents. We use weird ports. And when you start seeing weird ports that haven't been used before, it typically means someone's trying to get around the security that I've created.
Got it.
Yeah. So unfortunately, a lot of this is you're not going to be able to do the things that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you can get a router.
Yeah, and an education.
And an education. Oh, wait. Oh, that's right. That's what they do at college, right?
Yeah, that's the primary reason they're there, yes.
I mean, because they've got really good parties. I remember that part. And they had a good library. And it was the first time I actually had kind of broadband access to the...
Yeah, I was going to say, it used to be a good place to torrent. I don't think it is much anymore.
Well, because it was weird. When I was there, our dorms weren't wired. We actually had a modem. So we had to dial into the on-campus bank, which got us into a VAX, which was then connected to the internet. So we could download things very quickly to the VAX, but then very slowly from the VAX to...
Oh, interesting.
Never mind. I'm sorry. None of you care about that. Okay, let's go ahead and go back. If you drop into my computer here, what I'm going to need to do is I'm going to need to go to... And this will work... Oh, sorry, the other one, the other computer. I'm going to drop into my package center, and let's see if... VPN is running. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to turn this off. So I'm going to go ahead and say, stop. So I'm no longer running a VPN service. However, that port is still open. So there's nothing responding to the port, but there's still the rule, the firewall rule, that allows that port to come through.
And is that enough for someone to detect?
That is enough. As long as it's open, they can see that. That shouldn't be there.
I see.
So what I'm going to do, if we could go back, is I'm going to go into my firewall. And in the Synology, my firewall is in network center, network setting, security, firewall. And we'll notice that this has enabled a system rule for TCP, UDP. Those are the two types of packets that can come through my network. From anywhere to anywhere, and it's going to, that's the VPN center port. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and disable this. And what it should do is once it's restarted, it should have closed that port. So when I run another Nmap, that shouldn't show up. All right. So if you go to the other computer, Alex, I'm going to go ahead and do it again. I'm doing Nmap 10.135.25.202. And we'll see if that port still shows up. 1723 TCP. So it was closed before. What we want to see is we want to see it not show up at all. If it shows up, it still means that port is available, even though the source, the service that's running behind it, is not.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, we're just trying to mask everything. We're trying to make sure that anyone who's poking at my computer from an IT terminal won't see it. And there we go. See?
Oh, good.
It's gone. So no more port, but look what still shows up. MAC address 00113268-4368, and they know it's Synology.
Yeah.
I've just enumerated the router, and this will work for pretty much any router. And if they're paying attention, they'll know that shouldn't be there. So what I want to do is I want to make this look not like a router, but make it look like a network card. So make it look like it's actually my computer connected to the network, not my router connected to the computer, to the network, and my computer's connected to my router.
So this is where you dress your Synology up in camouflage.
Yeah, a little lipstick, maybe a little powder.
Anything to throw them off the scent. Whatever it takes.
So when they come in, you can say, no, that's a laptop. Just put a screen on the top.
It's a robot.
Yeah. No, we're not going to do that. We're actually going to toy with one of the more advanced settings that you might have in your router. And by the way, this is found in pretty much any decent router from Asus, from Netgear, from TrendNet, from TP-Link, from Synology. And if you've got an older router that's running DDWRT or OpenWRT, it also has that. Let's go ahead and check it out. So if you go back to here, I'm going to quit out of everything so I can start from scratch. What I want to do is I want to play with the MAC address. I want to show you how I can change it to make my device seem like it's not this device. I'm going to go into my network center. I'm going to go into my ISP settings under internet. There we go. And this right here, this is the MAC address that's being reported. So right now it's 00113268-4368. Anybody who's running something like Nmap or a tool like Nmap knows that that's a Synology device. What I'm going to do instead is I'm going to have it clone the device that it's currently connected to, which is 00E04C68071B. It's this generic USB adapter that's hanging off of my laptop. So what it did was it just took the MAC address that's associated with this little USB adapter and it's put it into the table for this. So when it gets pinged, it's actually going to tell it that that's its MAC address.
It's like a network plug as opposed to an actual Synology device.
Correct.
It wouldn't know the difference. But does that have the potential of throwing off how the network on the user's side of things is actually working?
Well, yeah, slightly. And we'll explain the risk there. But first, let's go and show it. If you go back to my other computer, it's gone down. There we go. That's right. Since I changed the MAC address, it's also changed the IP address. I'm now Nmap 10.135.25.123. Because since I changed the MAC address, the router that this is connected to thinks it's a different device, so it gave it a different address.
A new address.
There we go. So let's go ahead and run this. What we don't want to see is we don't want to see it being enumerated as a Synology incorporated device. Any other device would be happy. It'd be fine because they'll look at that. They'll go, oh, it's just it's a Chinese chipset, and that's fine. It's a network card connected to a desktop or a USB dongle connected to a laptop. There we go. So
those are pretty obviously very commonplace for someone to have. That's
precisely.
Why okay
and that. There we go. Look, see, it comes up as a Realtek semiconductor, which
nice.
is a completely generic chipset. Now, this is what they would see. They would see there's no ports open.
Yeah.
There are no services running. And the device connected to me is a Realtek semiconductor, which is such a generic chipset. It could be any laptop, any desktop.
Wow. That's awesome.
All right. And so if you've done this, you have more or less full functionality, except they won't know that it's a router and you're protected.
Now, I guess the bigger or thing you still have to pay attention to is where you store this in the room so it isn't quite so visible that you've got this thing with antennas poking out of it in the corner.
So what
keep
I did,
that in mind, too.
I actually put it inside of a mini ITX case. So it looks like it's just a desk. I even had the lights blink. So if they come in, it just looks like, oh, he's got a computer. He's got a bunch of networking cables. That's actually not all that atypical. But that's what I want to do. Now, there is a risk here. There is a risk, and here's the risk. You are taking the MAC address from another legitimate device.
That somebody else could have?
That someone else. Well, I mean, I have it. So because it cloned this adapter.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
Which means that if I ever take this laptop, and let's say I'm going onto campus somewhere, and I plug it in, there's now two devices with the exact same MAC address that could give you away at worst. At best, you might actually have a collision where the router thinks, you already have an IP address, and it gives you both the same IP address, and now you're not getting connectivity.
So maybe you want one of these that you just tape to the network cable in your room so you never remove it, but then you've got another one in your laptop bag that you bring with you that you use for that purpose.
Precisely.
Keep it there.
If you wanted to be a really not so great person, if you go back, this ISP setting, I can put any number here I want, any sequence. So if I wanted to be an absolute jerk, and please don't do this, I'm just going to explain how it's done, but don't do it. I could scan the network, I could find the MAC address of a different adapter and put it into my router.
Mm-hmm.
And. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. That's just mean. That's really mean. Really. It's annoying, especially since the other person will probably have no idea what you're doing.
So what is the risk to the other person if you do that?
Well, the other person, suddenly things won't work properly. Like sometimes it will work and sometimes it won't
work.
Right. Now, it also will affect you. So,
right.
And by the way, if you're calling attention to yourself that way, the IT administrator may track it down and go, well, I've got the single MAC address connected to two different ports. I better trace back where those ports go, and suddenly he's in your room and taking away your router. So
Yep.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
So this is actually super, super simple. I could have explained all this in just a couple of minutes, but the reason why we went through this explanation is because this is good knowledge to have. Mm-hmm. When you're on a campus, you have to assume it's a hostile environment. You can't assume that everyone there is following the acceptable use policies for the network. You can't assume that everyone's going to be a good guy. So protect yourself. Get yourself. It doesn't have to be a Synology. It doesn't have to be an expensive router, but at least something that puts some bit of firewall, some bit of security between the bulk of your devices and the rest of the network.
Made sense to me. Usually this stuff totally confuses me completely, but I think I'm following along. Next time I'm living in the dorm, I'll do this myself.
You know, you're going to have the talk with your daughters and say, honey, I know you're going to the dorm, but I want you to have this router. My father gave me this router. His father gave it to him, and it will protect you well.
Practice safe Synology.
Oh, my. Dad joke.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Such a dad joke. All right. Folks, when we come back, Jason, you've got a little something special. This is not just about practical knowledge. We also thought that our back to school should include a little something about technology that you might want to bring because it might lead to a career. You want to tease them a little bit?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of augmented reality goodness. It's the Project Tango phone that just came out, the Asus Zenfone AR. We'll talk about that
in just a bit. But first, let's go ahead and take a break to go back to CES and find some power products that might help you on your college adventure.
the transition to becoming a USB world, but there's a slight wrinkle in the force in USB-C. More and more of us are getting USB-C equipped laptops and notebooks and phones. We need a source for power, which is why we're here at Ventev, and I'm speaking with Scott. Scott, Ventev has been in my travel kit forever. You make the battery bank that I use when I'm on the go. You make the USB cables I use because I need to make sure that I'm getting decent amounts of power to my device. What have you got for the folks who live in USB-C?
We've got a couple of new products coming out. I think one of the best new options we have is the Wallport PD1300. This is a USB-C out. It has 45 watts, which means it's got the power to do laptops, Chrome, some of the new Chromebooks as well. It's got the folding prongs. Very, very portable and makes your life very, very convenient. One charger that can charge all your things at this in one small package. It's the way to go.
And this is something I'm looking very much forward to because, well, I've got an adapter for my laptop, which, by the way, is three times bigger than this,
yes.
And it has a lot of cables that are stuck into it. I've got an adapter for my USB devices, and then I've also got an adapter for my tablet because that's a slightly different charge. One device charges all of that. You sold me. Now, I know this is called the PD1300. I'm almost afraid to ask, what's the pricing going to be on this?
$45 for the charger itself. And then you tack on a USB-C cable as well for $25, USB-A and USB-C on the other end. You put these two together, you've got all the power you need to keep you mobile.
What I like about the event of cables, and people kind of laugh at me when I start talking about, no, cables are important. This really started with all the proliferation of really cheap USB cables, some not really delivering the power that you need, some having such high impedance that you're basically trickle charging your phone.
Yeah.
When it comes to USB-C, you are delivering so much power, it doesn't pay to skimp out.
No, absolutely not. You got to make sure you've got enough copper. You've got all the right components built into both ends of the cable, and you got to have a durable cable. If you have one that breaks and cracks, you're out of luck. You may have the best charger in the world, but if you don't have a good cable as well, you're without power.
You could buy a $3 cable 20 times, or you could buy one good cable once.
Absolutely.
Now let's go to this last product, which I know is still prototyping,
yeah,
but it's got me excited because there are a number of wireless charging standards. You have to remember which one is Qi, which one is another one. Ventev has an innovative solution that actually does them all.
That's right. What we're trying to do here at Ventev is make it simple. It just simply works. All you have to do is use our products, and it will power your devices. So when we looked at wireless charging, we needed to do that as well. In the past, the problem has been that it was really, really, really slow. It was easier and much faster just to plug it in, and then you would charge up. So what we've come up with is a new desktop stand that has wireless charging integrated into it. It's all integrated into this puck. This sample here doesn't show the wire, but there's a cable. It's a universal charger, so it has power. It has Qi. It has a PMA. It'll work with any of the wireless devices. You basically just put it on. The power is transferred. It's a 15-watt charger, so the speed problem has been solved. This will power up your device super, super fast. Another great thing about this is we've designed it so it can be flexible. So as you can see, it's got different grooves, so you can, depending upon your device and where the receiving end is, you can put it in the most optimal spot. You can do it horizontal, or you can do it portrait as well. Another great feature of this is if you like your phone to lean a little further back on your desk, you can do that. Or if you want it to sit up a little more vertical, you can take this, turn it around, and it positions it so it's in a much more vertical position.
Scott, this is fantastic. Again, I trust Ventev, so I can't wait to see them in the studio. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your tech. If they wanted to find out more about Ventev and what you can do to keep them going with power, where should they go?
Ventev.com is the best place to go.
Folks, if you're looking for something in C, you got to try something in a V.
That's the special kind that doesn't explode.
Well, you have to pay extra for that.
Oh, okay.
It is a feature.
Because it shoots you into the sky.
I kept waiting for them to be a liquidation of parts from hoverboards that were, banned from sale.
Mm-hmm.
because they can still remove the LiPo, and the parts were, you know, amazing. If you could get your hands on them, you could make so much, and they just never did. So somewhere there are warehouses full of old hoverboards that just will never see the light of day.
Yeah, they'll end up in some product, and then we'll be afraid of a new type of product that might explode.
Samsung Galaxy
There's always
9.
Something out there, isn't there?
Go figure. All right, so let's jump on to something that's a bit more futuristic. We've heard a lot about AR over the past couple of years, and I'd say it's eclipsed VR. VR was sort of our first foray into, okay, this is the future, but once we started seeing AR headsets that could project AR, augmented reality, on top of actual reality, it made VR kind of passé. It was like, oh, that's a cute toy, but this is something that I can actually do work with.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on the context that you're talking about, because I think VR has some work, applications to it as well. AR seems to be, right now, the narrative around AR seems to be that, well, you can actually use it to do things like measure the room and, you know, put it to, like, there's an app on the Play Store where you can, where it ties into the acoustics of the room. It uses the microphone and the Tango kind of spatial recognition to help you set up the acoustics of your room. So there's a little bit more useful qualities to AR. At the same time, like, I feel like we were early on VR and we were very hyped up on the potential of VR, and then things kind of slowed down and stalled a little bit. I'm not entirely convinced that the same thing won't happen for AR.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's coming. It's right on the horizon. It really seems like it's about to break through to whatever level it's going to.
I remember we went to a Lenovo event with their first ever production Tango phone. And they were showing us things of how, like, oh, for example, have you ever had trouble with GPS in a city? Well, if you turn this thing on, it uses data points from all the buildings around you, so it can locate you even if it has no connectivity to GPS or to the cellular network.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly cool feature. I'm like, yeah, that's useful. But then I said, what would that do to your battery life?
Well,
and they were really sheepish about it. I'm like, oh, okay, so it'll give you really good GPS, and then it's dead in 15 minutes.
All of this technology is going to be great once we revolutionize a new technology for batteries,
Once we get nuclear batteries, you can use this full speed.
Just think be able to do in 50 years.
But Asus, I saw this phone at CES. It was one of these, okay, it's slick, it's fast, but the big thing was Tango, native Tango. Tell me a little bit about the Asus Zen AR.
So this is the Asus Zen Phone AR. This is a blown up image.
Ooh.
I love it. So this is kind of unique in the sense that it's not the very first consumer Project Tango device. Project Tango, of course, is Google's project around AR, around having what you'll see on the back here, this kind of complicated, complicated camera array, which they call, Asus calls this the TriCam system, a 23 megapixel camera combined with a motion tracking camera with a fisheye lens and then depth sensing camera with IR. All that together gives the Project Tango devices, and this one in particular, the ability to determine where it stands in space. So not only are you going to get, control of, like, rotating the phone with the accelerometer and those sorts of things that we're used to, but it will actually tell, and I'll show you here in a second, that my phone is here in the room as opposed to here, and it'll change the computation as a result of that. This is the first Project Tango phone to, I would say, be kind of up to snuff when it comes to consumer phones that we're used to. The Lenovo Fab 2 Pro was probably the first consumer Project Tango phone that came out not too long ago, probably about like 8 months ago, but it was gigantic.
Yeah.
And it was obviously a phone that you only get if, for a very specific reason. It wasn't a phone that you just would get that would go toe-to-toe with any other premium smartphone out there and, oh, by the way, have Project Tango built in. This one touts that it does that, and for the most part it does. I mean, you can see it's really thin, it's really light, it feels like a premium smartphone.
And that's what Google's been pushing for. They don't want Project Tango to mean, oh, well, now I've got a phone that has to compromise on these other things. They said, put it in a premium phone, and that's where we want to see the feature set.
Yeah.
Also, that thing that you mentioned about it being able to use multiple cameras in order to exactly cement its actual space and relation to other objects in reality, super important. Anyone who's played with VR or AR knows that if you don't have that down and your field of view kind of shifts, jumps even a little bit, it just pulls you right out of the experience.
Right.
It has to, if you're going to have an augmented reality, it has to feel as if it's actually part of reality. It can't look like a video game on a screen.
Yeah, and I mean, what they've done here, so 23 megapixel camera, right? So that allows for the pass-through video to be really sharp, really, really nice. I'm going to show you a game that I played around with a little bit called Towers for Tango. Go ahead and hit continue here, and it'll load up. And essentially what this means, it's your standard tower game, but you can place it on any surface. So as I tilt my phone, you see how it extends back out into the background. It's like, no, you can't put it here because there's a chair there that's an obstacle. I could put it here, though, because this is a table, and it will construct my tower on the table. You can see as it's putting it together, I'm moving my phone in space, and I'm getting closer and further away. Of course,
nice.
It's doing some loading and stuff.
Okay, that's cool.
So as I get closer, I can kind of see into the rooms. I can go underneath the rooms and see the little people walk in and everything, walk around the table. I get shifted perspective. Oh, hey,
that's really solid. Padre. That's actually, oh my goodness.
Yeah, so.
I had no idea it was that good. I saw a demo of this, and it was not this smooth.
Yeah, well, I mean, so this is a Snapdragon 821, last year's processor, but they say it's, there we go. Don't crush it. It's Godzilla Padre. It's Podzilla. So it's a Snapdragon 821. They say it's optimized for Project Tango. To 8 gigs of RAM in here to power this, and you can see I've got it anchored to the table, right? Like, it's right on top of the table there. Don't break the AR wall. So really interesting technology that's happening here. These multiple sensors on the back allow for very accurate tracking when you're kind of moving your phone around. You don't get a whole lot of that jolting.
Oh,
the processor and the memory combined make this for a pretty smooth experience. The phone itself does get a little warm from time to time when you're doing
this. It's cranking three cameras and all the processing power needs to do all this in real time.
Yeah, and your battery, of course, is going to take a huge hit while you're doing this. It drops pretty fast.
Well, just the fact that you can kind of move through the city and it keeps up with all the perspective changes immediately. It's not like, recalculating. It's immediate. It feels as if that's already there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty neat. One thing I've noticed, though, I feel like this happens pretty quickly after you start playing around with this, is that in order to live in this world, right, you're constantly looking through the screen, going up like this. Like, if you've ever played a tower game, it's really easy to just sit there and, I'll add a tower here. If you're playing this game, like, you're moving. You're going all around the place because you got to come over here and go up to the bank and tap on the bank and, do your investments there, whatever, come back out. Like, there's no, like,
this is
standing
not a
in
lean,
one place.
This is not a lean back game.
No. And a lot of the stuff with Project Tango is not lean back. That's kind of the point, is that it takes your environment and makes it useful in a different way. Let's see here. What else can we do? I know that the kind of standard use for something like this that we hear time and time again is like, well, you can audition furniture or appliances in your home, like Wayfair, Lowe's. There's a number of these apps. Gap has a way that you can kind of audition in the real space, like their clothes.
What I'll look like.
It doesn't go that far. I feel like it should. I feel like I should be able to tell it, I'm 6'8". Your normal long sleeve shirts, even if I get an extra large, like, it might fit in the sleeve, but it's going to be really wide in the waist. And it doesn't really do that. You could see where they'll probably get there. But taking a quick look here at Wayfair, you can shop in 3D. We'll go ahead. And I don't know, what do you think we need for the studio? Should we
We need that ottoman, the poof.
The
poof.
Ottoman. Okay, this is a beautiful poof
Jason.
Ottoman. 3D view in the room.
We need a poof on this table.
You want me to put a poof on the table?
Poof the table.
Okay, so then I've got... And you can see how it's scanning, right? It's scanning the different layers. If I go down here, it detects that there's objects in the way. And it's like, well, you can't put it there. See, there's something right behind it.
Okay, that's cool.
So it's scanning in real time. We'll go ahead and go right here. We'll go ahead and drop this poof ottoman. And it's big, by the way. I don't know if you knew that the poof ottoman was that big, but there you go.
It is so poofy.
It is very poofy, and I can move it around with my fingers if I want to. If I want to put it on the ground, I can move it over there, and maybe that's a good spot.
That I know would entertain people for hours and hours and hours. You could virtually redecorate your room.
I'm not so certain about hours and hours and hours.
Well, I'm not.
I feel like after a while, it kind of you kind of get tired of holding your arm up, to be honest.
Well, I mean,
but it's a really, really cool feature.
It's more tiring to keep buying things and then bring them back because you're like, it just didn't look the way I thought it was going to look.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you can get right up in it and be like, ooh, I like the fabric. That's really nice. Uh-oh, you're obscured by the poof. Padres obscured by the poof. Okay, and then you can take a picture of it. So you can kind of see ways that it's useful. I think the interesting thing about Tango right now is the potential for people who are learning about development or people who are, like, there's a magical moment in technology, and we've seen it in different technologies around apps and everything, where suddenly there's a movement, or suddenly Apple or Google releases this new aspect to their store, mm-hmm. and it's like a gold rush, right? Like, everyone rushes to be the first to develop things for that, because there isn't a whole lot of competition. Meanwhile, app stores have millions upon millions of apps. It's really hard to stand out. This is a way to stand out. If you want to spend your time developing for a new new technology like Project Tango, there's like, what, 38 apps in the Play Store right now that are Tango compatible? Not much, which for the purchaser, for the consumer, right, thinking about getting a phone that supports Project Tango, that's something to consider. Like, you're going to get it thinking you're going to do all this stuff with it, and then realize there isn't a whole lot that you can do with it yet. It's a chicken and egg scenario.
Yeah, or the phone and the App Store. You know, what comes first, the phone or the App Store? Well, you have to have the phone to have the App Store, but the App Store doesn't make much sense if, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Now, that's why we've included this in this back to school episode, because if you are going back to school, specifically if you're going to college, this is something that you want to play with. Every report that we've been reading has said that this kind of technology, AR, is a multi-billion dollar industry just waiting in the wings. And you have a ground floor opportunity. Now, if you think of this as a piece of not just back-to-school equipment, but also as a potential entree into that billion-dollar industry, then it becomes a great device indeed. How much is something like this going to cost, though, Jason?
This is, what is it? It's $600, $700 right around there.
That's not that bad, actually.
I mean, it's, you know, it's your standard kind of...
It's not nearly as much as, say, like the Note 8.
Well, yeah, we're bordering on $1,000 smartphones with the Note 8. And then, I mean, it's like $999. $999 not for the Note 8, $999. The expected price of the next iPhone is right around $999. So we're right there. So this, in comparison to those, is not as much. But it's still kind of on the premium side of things. And thankfully, I mean, the phone itself has a lot of premium touches to it. It really does feel like a smartphone that also, oh, by the way, has the Project Tango technology built into it. It's just, I hesitate to say, yes, rush out and get it for Project Tango, only because, man, Tango really has a lot to prove, and it's already been around. Like, the technology, they've been working on it for 2 or 3 years now. And after 2 or 3 years, we have, like, 38 apps, two phones that it could maybe sort of, you know, could even entertain the idea of doing this. So maybe it'll get better. I mean, my hope is that, as far as augmented reality is concerned, my expectation is that Apple is working on ARKit. They've already released that to developers. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff that I've seen that developers are releasing around ARKit that they've done in a short period of time with hardware that iPhones just have out of the box, it doesn't require this complicated array of hardware, which means everyone's going to get it, is really impressive.
Right.
And compared to this, this might be the better technology. But Apple's going to win, at least in the short term, because everyone will get it instead of just the purchasers of an Asus Zenfone AR.
That's the power of that ecosystem.
Right.
And I think you're right. It's always shown so much promise. But for me, going back to Google I.O. every year, they've basically run the same demos the last three Google I.O.s, which tells me, cool tech, but it's not really advancing. So that's why we're kind of hoping... I mean, come on.
Hi, little guy.
Who doesn't want to create a little velociraptor in their dorm room?
Here, have some food. Just kidding. Don't upset the dinosaur. Just back away from the dinosaur.
I thought we set these ground rules, Jason. No dinosaurs in the studio.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm wondering if when ARKit comes out, and people start to see it and everything. Obviously, there's going to be that gold rush, I think, for developers on the iOS side of things. Will that translate over into Android, into Project Tango? Gosh, I'm thinking it's going to be a real tall order if all of the AR on Google requires this hardware array. Because, I mean, not all of them are going to do it, and that's a hard thing to compete with when all iPhones can. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, folks, you've had security, you've had power, and now you've had the future on this episode of Know How. Really, what more do you want? Jason, I want to thank you so very much for joining us.
Yeah.
It's always fun to see what you're doing, because I get so caught up in my little makery area that, you know, it's wonderful to see astounding technology like this, which is actually in the hands of consumers. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell the Kitas where they can find you on the Twit TV network and maybe elsewhere?
Well, I mean, I'm all over the network filling in. I just did This Week in Google. Leo was out this week. I've got a few more of those coming up, all about Android, tech news today. Pretty much wherever I'm needed, I'll be there.
There you go. Jason Howell, the Twit extraordinaire. Now, if you want to know anything from this episode, of course, we've got our show notes, which you're going to be able to find at twit.tv/KH. If you go there, you won't just find our previous episodes, but you'll also find the links to the products that we've talked about. You'll see the step-by-step for the little tutorial I gave on security this morning. And most importantly, you will find where you can subscribe to Know How. Folks, if you want to support Know How, if you want to see more Know How, if you want to see Know How go into the topics that you want to see, please, please pick a version and it will be downloaded into the device of your choice. And don't forget to share Know How with your friends. Also, you can find us in the socials, specifically in Google Plus. We actually have a very vibrant Google Plus community. Over 11,000 Kitas, that's our know-it-alls. They're posting every single day. It's a great place to ask questions, to answer questions, or maybe you want to brag a little bit and show us pictures and videos of your projects. It's all at Google Plus. Just go to Google Plus, look for Know How. There's a very short approval process, but we'll get you in right away. Also, don't forget that you can find us on the Twitters. That's right, we tweet. Tweet a lot. In fact, I just tweeted right before this. You're going to find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. Jason, where did they find you?
Jason Howell, at Jason Howell. Pretty easy.
Yeah, and we've got a third member of our crew. He's the man who keeps everything together. He makes us run on time. We call him Jimbo. And you can find Jimbo at twitter.com/ANELF3.
Excuse me, Padre. That's pronounced Alex.
That's because the bow is
though. I wish I had one of them dinosaurs over here, though, because I could use some company way in the dark over here. You know, it'd be kind of a nice thing if, you know,
real use of AR.
Some technology to, you know, make them dinosaurs all, you know, work out here.
Wait, there
we
go.
Let's see here. Let's see if we can
drop it
in valid position.
Drop in
need a surface to put it on.
There's no baby dinosaur.
There's no surface.
Just put them up right on the thing here.
Come on.
There you go.
Nice,
see?
Nice doggy.
Now we've got someone to keep Alex company.
Yeah, that's nice. Thank you very much.
Folks, until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Jason Owl.
And now that you know how,
what are you waiting for? Go do it! Just go do it already. You're still here. Why are you here?
Keep going.
Go do it.